That's the Saturday Morning Podcast. Man, what a crazy, from the Women's World Cup to the NBA free agency, what a crazy last couple of weeks it's been, and I'm going to bring on my friend Jason Whitlock. Speak for yourself, 3 to 4:30 Eastern FS1, former offensive lineman at Ball State, worked at ESPN, Fox Sports, AOL, Kansas City Star, blah, blah, blah. All right, Whitlock, first of all, let's start with this. It's Saturday morning. Russell Westbrook has been moved. Your initial reaction to Westbrook's OKC career. I was saying on my show, it kind of felt like at the end, Sam Presti was being held hostage. He just wanted to get out of a hostage situation. I think he probably feels pretty good today that he can start over.
Yeah, I think they feel real good that they can start over. Look, they got 15 first-round picks, I think, over the next 7 years to work with. And so as a general manager, that's probably got to be fun. He's probably sitting there saying, look, we once had Harden, Westbrook, and Kevin Durant. I can do it again. But, you know, my initial thoughts, Colin, are mostly go to humor. I find this entire situation with Westbrook humorous. And you're part of the humor I find in it because you sat out there on a limb for 5 or 6 years criticizing this guy and saying, look, I just don't think this works. I don't think he's an ideal point guard. I don't think guys like playing with him. And you took a lot of heat.
Yeah.
A lot of heat. And there's no better feeling than this payoff that you're having right now. It's like yesterday on my show, I did a commentary saying that when they retire Westbrook's number in OKC, they need to have you do the introduction.
Well, you know, it's funny about that because years ago, I heard this from a friend of Bill Belichick. Bill Belichick's theory is if you cannot evaluate your own talent, you have no business evaluating college talent or the other 31 teams. Belichick knows when his players have tapped out. He's great at this. I think Sam Presti made a mistake. History tells you, Jason, and I've been watching this league like you for three decades, hyper-athletic guards, point guards that can't shoot, don't win titles, and they don't age well. Stevie Francis fell off a cliff. Marbury fell off a cliff. Westbrook, to me, just look at history. Watch film. I never got it. Did you? Were you ever a Westbrook fan?
Yeah, the first triple double season, I gave him credit. And we used to sit on Speak for Yourself, and I would defend Westbrook while you were tearing into him. And so, now was he one of my favorite players? Did I think he played smart? No, but I didn't think you could discount the effort. Now, the one thing I will say, Cal Herd, in Sam Presti's defense, is sitting in Oklahoma City, where you're not an ideal location, I think it clouds your view. I think it makes you overlook some of Westbrook's warts and just say, man, the guy plays so hard, and our fans love him, and he doesn't mind being here. And I think it just kind of clouds your view. And so, I'm not – what you did, not remotely easy. But if someone is going to see his flaws, it's going to be someone from a distance who can just be cold and objective. And so that's a defense for Sam Presti. The rest of us that didn't see it as early as you, we have no defense.
You know, let me say where I was wrong, though. This league is about finding stars and stars that get along with others. Kobe wasn't easy, but he got along with Gasol and Shaq long enough to win 5 rings. I've been a huge Chris Paul fan forever. And for the record, Pelicans, Clippers, and Rockets had their best individual seasons ever in the regular season, with Chris Paul. He wins. But this is something I overlooked. I heard for years he was difficult. And my takeaway was he plays defense, he's super smart, high basketball IQ, it's everybody else's fault. Okay, so he forced his way to New Orleans, he forced his way to the Clippers, and now he wants his way out of Houston. At some point, did I just miss on Chris Paul that you gotta get along with stars? The example I would use, Jason, Matt Damon's a good actor. He's not Meryl Streep. He's not Jack Nicholson. He's not the classically trained Jeremy Irons. What makes Matt Damon a superstar is he's a good actor who can get along with other stars very well. Chris Paul, like Damon, is very good, but he's not Kobe. He's not talented enough to not get along with co-stars. And I think to a large degree, I whiffed on Chris Paul. What do you make of him now bouncing around the league?
It's obviously it's not a great look for Chris Paul. What I've always liked about Chris Paul, but I think he's in the wrong era, is he is this generation's Isaiah Thomas, but he never found his Chuck Daly. He never was able to, me, partner with a coach and then just build a culture and a team around him. I think that's the issue with Chris Paul. I know that he's someone who is friends with Isaiah Thomas, and I think saw himself as this generation's Isaiah Thomas, but he just wasn't able to pull it off. He wasn't able to build a team in his image. And look, I guarantee you, in this era, Isaiah Thomas would be seen as difficult. But, you know, when the coach and the organization are all in with you and you have a great coach that you're working with, you can be a little bit difficult. Look, obviously Michael Jordan was very difficult, but he had things his way and he had Phil Jackson to work with, and it worked out. Chris Paul, I just don't think ever found the right dance partner.
You talk more politics than I do in sports, but I will say this. I did like, as we shift gears, I like the balance we have in sports. My wife's vegan. I can't be vegan because I believe it's too rigid. I tend to be kind of a moderate politically, a moderate liver. I work out every day, but it's 30 minutes. It's not an hour. I'm very much down the middle, try to get along with everybody. Megan Rapinoe is highly, she's a dissenter. She's a disruptor. Muhammad Ali was. Obviously, she's not Muhammad Ali. LeBron James is. I like the balance we have in America now, where LeBron's outspoken, Serena's outspoken, Rapinoe's outspoken, but Mike Trout isn't. Brooks Koepka isn't. Tom Brady isn't. Christian Pulisic's very quiet, and he's our men's soccer star. So my takeaway on Megan Rapinoe is I like even. I like balance. So I didn't have a problem with Rapinoe firing shots at a fairly controversial president or a real controversial president. What did you make of Rapinoe's emergence and comments over the last 3 weeks to a month?
Well, I think Rapinoe is authentic. That is how she actually feels, and I think she's super talented. And so whether we want to or not, we're going to have to listen to her. As it relates to sports overall, I really don't want to have a political discussion in sports. I don't think any of these guys are really qualified, that from Rapinoe to LeBron James. I think they're doing the best they can. They're saying what they believe, but I don't think it's very informed, and I wish they would leave it to others. Again, it's hard. I can't beat up Rapinoe like I did Colin Kaepernick because I just think she's far more authentic. She's certainly far more talented in her sport. Having said that, leaving Rapinoe out of this, I do think one thing that has been undercovered in the world of sports, because no one wants to take that heat, I thought that women's soccer team made fools of themselves overall. I thought the celebrations, the arrogance, all of it was over the top and reminded me of one of those international basketball teams we had, I think, where maybe Allen Iverson and some others were on it. And I think they ended up winning a bronze medal or whatever, but people didn't like the way they behaved. They didn't represent the country well, and they got criticized for it. I think there's a segment of America that doesn't like this U.S. women's soccer team because they got some toxic femininity going on. they're just a little too over the top, too in your face, too arrogant for some people.
Yeah, I mean, and my takeaway is if you don't like them representing America, then you can't tell me you love Trump. And I don't want to talk too much politics, but I always feel this way. And I think I've told you this. Trump is like a controversial Howard Stern in the 70s and 80s. He doesn't give you anywhere to land but for or against him. And I think that's his game plan. He's trying to strengthen his base and clean up the other side. In his opinion, it's lost its way. And I kind of think you can't tell me you like Trump because globally he gets a ton of pushback representing America, and then tell me you hate the soccer team even though they win because they land wrong for America. Like, you either like our bravado and understand it, or you don't like it. And if you fall on don't like Trump and don't like the U.S. World Cup team, I'm good. But I think it's an illustration of people's personal politics. If you love the women's world team, hate Trump, or vice versa. Does that make any sense?
Some, where I would disagree is like, look, if these guys want to get involved in politics in a real way, have at it. Go run for Congress, go do something, and then go behave like silly politicians do now, where everything's pandering to the camera and Twitter. If Megan Rapinoe wants to be AOC, she, you know, have at it. She's older than AOC, so go run for Congress or whatever. It's just, for me, in sports, I would prefer to escape the political divisiveness.
What do we do? You know, it's interesting about the equal pay topic. Obviously, again, it's polarizing. There's a reason in fashion that the number one male model makes less than the 75th best female supermodel, because women drive the commerce in fashion. Similarly, men mostly drive the commerce in sports. All professional leagues have men. 99% of sports bettors are men. About 70% of sports viewers are men. So men generally drive the consumption of American sports, from betting to viewing to participating, blah, blah, blah. But there are these unique situations where Serena is significantly more interesting than the best American male player. And clearly the United States women's team is a juggernaut, and our men can't even make the World Cup. So that's where I'm like, then just pay them. Like overall, I think men generally earn more money because they drive, men's consumption drives the industry. But I think we do have a rare situation, do we not, with the United States women's national team where, listen, the numbers are huge. They outdrew in their final the men's World Cup game by, I think, like 20%.
Well, look, just remember, the men's World Cup game had no American team,
right,
even in the tournament, let alone the finals. And so I'm not sure. I don't believe they're unfairly paid. I think that they're playing single-A, double-A baseball, and they're dominant. They're not in the major leagues in terms of the number of women's teams around the globe competing, the quality of play. There's a reason why we beat Thailand 13-0, because just Thailand's just not that good, and the competition in the World Cup just isn't nearly, in women's soccer, just isn't nearly as intense or as competitive as the men. They're having to play catch-up, and so I analogize this to the argument they have in the WNBA, where the WNBA players, oh, my God, we don't fly first class. Oh, my God, we don't stay at the best hotels, and we don't have – and I was like, you do know there was a time when that was true of male NBA players as they built their business. And so there's a process. And, again, I played football in the Mid-American Conference. We bus to 90% of our games. We didn't fly. And it's because the Mid-American Conference football doesn't generate that kind of revenue or interest to justify it. And so I think there's a process, there's a hill that women's sports are climbing up, and women's soccer in particular. It doesn't have the same kind of history as tennis. Again, I don't think we had a team until 1985. We had a U.S. men's national men's soccer team in 1885. And so, again, my argument is, like, I think they're arguing for reparations far more than they are for equal pay. They want to be paid because they think it's unfair that we didn't start a women's World Cup team in 1885, and we should be right where the men are, who have 100 years of history in a business that, you know, I think the World Cup, I think, started in 1930 or 1931. They're just, the men are just in a stronger business that's been around longer. And as time goes on, things are going to improve for the women, and their pay will increase. But men have walked in those shoes. And so I get, and again, this is where I'm frustrated, where politics introduces itself into sports, because I don't think this is really about equal pay or the women's soccer players being treated unfairly. I think that they're just being used to further the argument that they have in politics that women aren't paid equal for equal work. And so let's gin up something over here in women's soccer and use it as a big example to make this big political point.
Yeah, that's a good point. Jason Whitlock, good argument on his side. Speak for yourself, 3 to 4:30 Eastern, FS1. So the NBA stuff we've got, the soccer stuff we covered. Now we move into a football season, college and pro. I got to ask you one big macro question, because obviously we have the Big Ten and a lot of conferences, a connection with it, FS1 and Fox Sports. Are you concerned, as somebody who loves college football like I am, at the, you know, we talk about the NBA lack of parity. Bama, Clemson favored again. I feel the sport is leaning too far heavily Southern, and I think Denver West doesn't care. I look at local TV ratings for big bowl games. They're not very good. What do you make of the dominance of Alabama and Clemson? Three of the last four titles, overwhelmingly favored this year. Clemson looks like, with that quarterback, they're going nowhere for several years. Do you worry about the health of that sport?
Yes, but I don't blame it on Clemson-Alabama dominance. I think those things would actually be a strength. I just think we've oversaturated things with the bowl games. I think the teams play too many games. And I think, and I'm out on a bigger limb than you were on Westbrook, I think the playoff system has been a mistake. I think college basketball was a lot stronger when there was an incredible emphasis on the regular season and an incredible importance placed on winning your conference championship. There used to be a mystique to whoever the Big Ten champion was and going out and playing the Pac-12 champion in the Rose Bowl. That's gone. Everything now is focused on who can make it into this four-team playoff deal. And the regular season has been de-emphasized, and winning your conference championship has been de-emphasized.
That's a very, very good point. I don't think you're crazy. You know, Mark Cuban once told me this. He said, everybody thinks in sports, put all your games on. And he goes, scarcity matters. The NFL's got one game a week. He goes, college basketball, baseball, the games are all on. So like the NBA, I can watch every game every night. The NBA regular season ratings don't matter. I think you point out something that's fascinating. When I was a kid growing up, Jason, if my Huskies won the Pac-12, I almost didn't care about the bowl game. Like, that meant if you beat USC and UCLA as a Washington State kid, I won. I felt great about that, even if we lost the Rose Bowl.
Look, I think the whole argument at the end of the year about who's number one, and, you know, I think that was actually good. And I think we've been driven off a cliff that it's playoffs, 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 and we got to know who's number one. And I think we lost some of the uniqueness and the mystery of college football. And we've given it up, and it doesn't seem like we'll ever get it back. I can remember years ago when I first got to Kansas City and started having success, our mayor was Emmanuel Cleaver, and he's now a longtime member of Congress. But I can remember he brought me over to his – he was a minister at a church and brought me over. And one of the things he told me was, don't tell everybody everything about yourself. Be a mystery. That's far more interesting.
Yeah, no, it's a really good point. I think, like you said, it's too late to bring it back. What's the old saying? Horses out of the barn. But I do think now they'll just expand the playoff. But I do think your overarching point, which is the regular season is really all about getting to the tournament, which, by the way, there's 130 Division I football teams. Only four can get in, and we already know two of them. So it does puncture a lot of the spirit of Labor Day until mid-December.
Let me say this. If a tournament was the end-all, be-all, and was going to make your sport popular, wouldn't college basketball's regular season be more important than what it is? Because they got the best tournament. And so, again, when you place all that emphasis on a tournament, I think you de-emphasize the overwhelming majority of games that you play, which are during the regular season.
Good stuff, Whitlock. I should host the show with you. Oh, wait, I did, and I was exhausted. Good talking to you, buddy.
Thank you.